Hello and welcome to NewsHour from the BBC World Service. We're coming to you live from London. I'm James Menendez. It is the world's most populous country and its second biggest economy. But for more than 1,000 days since the pandemic began, China has been largely cut off from the outside world. Chinese citizens couldn't travel overseas, and anyone wanting to get into China faced arduous restrictions with long periods of quarantine and endless testing. It was all part of the government's zero COVID strategy to limit the spread of infection. Today, though, that self-imposed isolation came to an end, and international travellers have been arriving into the country by land and by air. For these passengers arriving at Shanghai Airport, the lifting of quarantine rules was very welcome.
I had no idea quarantine would be lifted. The day I boarded the plane on the 6th, the policy wasn't effective yet, and today we are the first batch under the new policy. So I only knew about the policy after I bought the ticket. I would have considered myself extremely lucky if I only needed to quarantine for 2 days, but it turns out I don't have to do quarantine at all. There was no paperwork too, we just walked out like that, exactly like in the past.
Previously, I wanted to come back in the summer, but my flight was suspended, so I ended up not coming back. So I think it's really good that the policy has changed now. It's really humane. It's very convenient for people to come back now. It's a necessary step, I think. COVID has become normalized now, and after this hurdle, everything will be smooth.
I'm quite happy not needing to be in quarantine. Who wants to be in quarantine? Nobody.
At the same time, though, there has been a sharp increase in COVID cases within China after the abrupt easing of restrictions. That sudden change in policy was prompted by rare outbreaks of public protest against the measures. But Mi Feng of China's National Health Commission says the easing of restrictions doesn't mean the government is relaxing its approach to the virus.
Starting from today, we categorize and manage COVID as a Class B infectious disease. Our focus has pivoted from preventing infection to protecting health and preventing severe cases. Downgrading COVID doesn't mean letting it rip. Rather, we are more scientific, targeted, and efficient in our response. We can do better in coordinating pandemic response and socio-economic development.
Well, let's talk to Victor Gao, former government official, now vice president of the Center for China and Globalization, a think tank in Beijing. Welcome to the program, Mr. Gao.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yes, good to have you indeed. Is this the right moment, do you think, to be opening up the country, given the speed and spread of the infections?
Well, China has made a major decision to make this transit from the dynamic zero COVID policy, which China practiced for 3 years with great success in minimizing deaths and infections, to a new paradigm, that is to live with COVID. And I think whether you think this is the best time or not, the decision has been made. And China is going through this wall of fire, and hopefully we will emerge on the other side of the fire more or less unscathed, even though we are experiencing huge number of infections and high number of deaths, especially among elderly people and people with pre-existing diseases.
Can I just ask you this, though? You talked about it as a sort of wall of fire. I mean, is it a price worth paying? I mean, we don't know exactly how many people are dying of COVID in China, but people are talking about 10,000, 15,000, maybe more than 20,000 every day.
Well, if we compare China's situation with, let's say, the United States or with India, which already suffered huge numbers of deaths and infections in 2021, 2020, for example, then China has already experienced huge success and achievements for the last 3 years. However, we need to let go all these quarantines, and today is the first day when China dropped all the quarantine requirements for incoming travelers, Chinese or foreigners from rest of the world coming into China. This is a huge step, and this will be very significant for international cooperation between China and the rest of the world. We know anything you do will have some cost, And for China to completely abandon the quarantine requirements, to abandon the dynamic zero COVID policy, of course there will be costs, huge costs, in terms of infections, in terms of deaths, very unfortunate deaths among elderly people, etc. But I think we need to move forward. I think China and the rest of the world will eventually put this pandemic behind us. China has already downgraded this pandemic from COVID-19 lung disease to COVID-19 infections. Thus, everything involving government responses, for example, how to treat with a disease, etc., has been downgraded.
Yeah.
And I hope eventually WHO will also make a final decision to downgrade this pandemic, and mankind as a whole, including the Chinese, will move on.
But it is still a very dangerous virus, particularly for those who aren't fully vaccinated. I just wonder whether the cost could have been lessened greatly if the government had ensured that everyone was fully vaccinated. And again, we don't have official figures, but there are estimates that suggest, 40% of those aged over 80 hadn't had the three shots of vaccine they need?
Well, first of all, I think China was one of the first countries to come up with vaccines at the very early stage of this pandemic. However, for the past 3 years or so, China has not experienced all the variants that this virus has gone through in many other countries and in many other parts of the world. Therefore, whether the Chinese versions of the vaccines are completely up to date, that's a scientific question.
Yeah, but I'm talking about making sure that with the vaccines that you do have, that everybody who needs them has had them. You could have used the time during zero COVID to do that, couldn't you?
Well, yes. Allow me to emphasize one point. I think from the very beginning of the outbreak of the pandemic, China, like many other countries, has been in the race against time. And when the final decision was made to drop all the quarantine requirements, I think China reached a period when the scientists in China believed that the toxicity for the Omicron variant that we are experiencing, in most of the cases of infections, of course, are really relatively low. And the population as a whole can, in general, afford to deal with that. And this is much lower in toxicity compared with Delta and many other previous variants. In that sense, I think China lucked out. Because if we were experiencing all these high level of infections and deaths in 2020, 2021, for example, then comparable to the United States, China should have already lost about 4.4 million people. And we are now in the low level of toxicity about this Omicron variant. And let's see, however, we can do improve our work, etc., to go through this wall of fire. I hope the rest of the world will sympathize with us and support us rather than, you know, constantly criticizing us for what we are doing.
We're out of time, I'm afraid. Victor Gao of the Center for China and Globalization in Beijing, thank you. Well, that is some of the politics. Let's get an insight into what the easing of restrictions might mean for China's economy. Simon Cox is China economics editor for The Economist magazine based in Hong Kong. First of all, how big a moment is the opening up of the country's borders, does he think?
It's a huge moment, not just for China, but for the rest of the world as well. I mean, this is the world's second largest economy. It's gone through this extraordinary social experiment, closing off flows of people to the rest of the world. And that's all changed today. And from what I hear, they're quite crowded checkpoints here in Hong Kong, people hoping to visit family members they might not have seen for months or even years.
And I want to talk about the impact on the wider global economy a little later, but just give us a sense of how damaging this period, more than 1,000 days of isolation, how damaging has that been for China's economy?
It's been hugely costly, especially in the last year or year and a half. China's no-tolerance approach to COVID did give it some economic advantages in the early period of the pandemic. It allowed their manufacturing to get back on stream faster than some of their rivals. But latterly, let's say the last 18 months or so, it's exacted a very heavy economic toll. One estimate I saw was that it's cost them about $1 trillion of foregone output. That's goods and services they might have produced if they had exited from zero COVID earlier, but didn't because of the controls and the effects on consumer confidence and so on.
And what has it meant in terms of foreign investment? I mean, have lots of companies moved out in this period?
There has been some movement. There's also been a shift in mindset. It takes time to move factories. I think more people are considering it now than were even at the beginning of 2022. I think both the invasion of Ukraine and the lockdowns in Shanghai especially have shaken some of the confidence and long-term commitment of foreign investors. There's also been an interesting movement in the opposite direction. Companies that are committed to serving the Chinese market, selling to the Chinese consumer, have started to bring more of their supply chain within China so that they can do everything onshore in a sort of self-contained way because they're less confident now of being able to obtain supplies from neighbouring countries.
And so how quickly can the economy rebound? Is it going to take a while, do you think?
I think it'll take a while for some parts of the economy. The infection wave actually seems to be proceeding even faster than we expected. And so it may be that peak infections arrive earlier. It may even have happened already. What might take longer is consumer confidence and just a sense that people are back on their feet, that they can rely on their jobs and incomes, and that some of their property values and other aspects of their household wealth have stabilized. I think that will take a bit longer.
Is there lots of sort of pent-up consumption in the system? People haven't been able to spend money. And once that confidence comes back, are they likely to start spending again? And what impact will that have on the economy?
So that's one of the huge questions that's still outstanding. So there are some excess savings, some household savings, money they haven't been able to spend, that in theory they could spend now. But like I say, it's been a tough time for the Chinese consumer. You know, many people have lost their jobs or had big hits to income. They haven't had quite the same level of help that some other countries provided to their citizens. So it may be that this is a period in which people are just hoping to rebuild, consolidate, rather than splash out. Nonetheless, there will be some people, especially the more financially comfortable, who are just dying to go on some kind of foreign trip or treat themselves to things they've been denied over the last 3 years.
And so what will all this mean for the world economy? And is it likely to be a shot in the arm in broad terms for the global economy, do you think?
I think possibly not, actually. I think there'll be some countries that will benefit hugely. We think of Thailand, for example, that's missed out on a lot of Chinese tourists. You think of some commodity producers, Chile, Peru, who provide copper to China. And if the property market in China stabilizes, then they could enjoy much better prices for their metals.
Simon Cox of The Economist, speaking to me from Hong Kong. You're listening to NewsHour from the BBC World Service.